Hello, and you're very welcome to Shanks Mare. Well, last week I was walking the magnificent dunes of Dunfanaghy in County Donegal. Well, this week I've travelled as south as I can to the cliffs of West Cork, here at the beautiful Galleyhead. It's 5 miles southeast of Ross Carbery. I'm here to find out a bit more about how to spot some of our most incredible of marine animals, the whales and dolphins of Irish waters. Well, to tell me more, I'm joined on this walk by whale and dolphin expert Padraig Cooley of the Irish Whale and Dolphin Group. Padraig, we're sitting at the tip of Galleyhead, looking out to the horizon.
Just to put Galleyhead into some sort of perspective, as you look east of us here, this prominent tree out here is Seven's Head, and east, which is about 12, 13 miles east of us. East of there again, you'd have the old head of Kinsale. West of us, we're looking across Towhead, and those very far jagged rocks out there are called the Stags. And beyond the Stags, you'd have Kedge Island and then Shirkin and Cape Clear Island. So that kind of puts us into some sort of perspective.
In the middle of heaven, I think. I've been to Shirkin and Cape Clear, and they're beautiful islands. We're in shadow because behind us is Galleyhead's lighthouse. It's known for its old lighthouse.
Yeah, Galleyhead is just one of these stunning lighthouses. Of course, not every headland has a lighthouse. And in the case of Galleyhead, the mariners, when they're offshore, will always recognise Galleyhead because it flashes 5 times at 20-second intervals with a pause, and then that cycle just keeps repeating. And this is all on the Admiralty chart, so the mariners, as they're going by, will be able to simply reference their chart. They know they're off Galleyhead.
Sort of optic equivalent of Morse code.
Precisely.
When was Galleyhead Lighthouse built?
1878 it was built, and I think it sort of went into operation 1879. And at the time, an amazing fact is Galleyhead at that point and place and time was the brightest light, man-made light on Earth.
The brightest light in the world at that time. Incredible. One of the facts that's interesting about Galleyhead Lighthouse is that at the time they built it, they were very interested in using gas made from coal to illuminate the light itself.
That's right, and the coal was a special type of a coal. It was canal coal. The reason it needed to be a particularly strong light, because this area is kind of famous for its fog, and they needed a light that would penetrate the fog and would be visible from ships. Many of them would be 10, 15 miles offshore.
This lighthouse would shine inland.
That's right. Well, there is an interesting story about the back in 1900, the Sultan of Turkey was actually staying with the Earl of Ross Carbery, and he was wondering if it would be possible for the actual lights of Galleyhead to shine inland to light up Castle Freak, which was the sort of ancestral home of the Earl of Ross. They scraped the paint off the back glass, if you like, so the light shone on. And this caused all sorts of problems when in 1969 they changed from the old system, and the wattage increased from something like 300 candlelight to over 3 million candlelight. And you can imagine this was in 1969, and this raised potentially huge problems for motorists driving by in the main West Cork Road, who would have been absolutely blinded by this light. So they had to reach a bit of a compromise on that, and they had to black out the windows again in 1969.
What an incredible request to make. We passed Castle Freak on the way. It's a rather haunting castle.
Stephen Freak Evans has returned to the area, and he is related to the old family, and he's putting a lot of effort into renovating it and the grounds. So I mean, it should be an absolutely wonderful resource, because you know, since the 1920s, it has fallen into sort of rack and ruin over the decades.
And just like that, the lighthouse here is in very good condition.
The wonderful buildings behind are actually managed and run by the Irish Landmark Trust, and this was a part of a millennium project. And there are other examples of this, like Loophead in County Clare and Wicklow Head, and in common we have Galleyhead here in West Cork. Sorry, I just thought I saw Harbour Porpoise there. I lost my train. But the Irish Landmark Trust rent out this accommodation. They've upgraded it to a very, very high standard, and you can rent it year round.
Yeah, it's not a bad view either. And as you said, you think you might have seen something. We aren't here to talk about lighthouses, we're here to look at whales and dolphins. The whole point of this walk is to find out, for someone like me who doesn't know anything about whales and dolphins, if I'm going on a cliff walk, what should I look for in the sea that would give me an idea of what kind of whales and dolphins would be out there? The conditions at the moment, you tell me, are pretty perfect. Why
well,
is that?
I mean, everything. I mean, asking a whale watcher if they're happy with the weather is like asking a farmer or a fisherman if they've had a good year. invariably, there's always something wrong. If you've got good light, you've got strong winds. And if you've got strong winds, you've perfect visibility. Or if everything's perfect, it starts to rain. Or you've got white caps. And all of these, you know, wind and rain and white caps make watching, there's sometimes very subtle little cues that will show you where whales and dolphins are feeding or socialising. So right now everything is absolutely perfect. The wind is blowing offshore, as blowing across the land, and that's usually has almost a calming influence on the sea. But here at the moment it's spot on.
One thing that you said to me earlier was that you go whale watching either in the morning or in the evening, because the sun effectively is going to be either side of the horizon and you cannot look for whales when the sun is glaring at you.
Yeah, I mean, in the morning time like we have now, the sun is way off on our western shore over here. As you know, as we go through sort of 11, 12, 1 o'clock in the day, the sun is actually directly south of us and it's just throwing up a huge glare over the sea. And whale watching into the glare is you know, painful to say the least. You're really not going to see anything. So it's like if you ever watch a photographer, they're always out taking pictures in early morning or late afternoon. You generally have much better visibility and better light conditions.
And that's presuming the sun is actually shining and visible itself.
Exactly.
Let's get going and see what we can see. We're walking along now up from the lighthouse along the coastline, and as you look out, the sea, as you say, looks like a mirror. What kind of species will you expect to see in this part of Cork?
We'd expect to see the harbour porpoise, a small dolphin-like animal. They have this tumbling or this rolling type motion. Porpoises are quite shy animals. They don't swim with people. They're wary of boats, and usually see them in small groups of twos and threes. Dolphin-wise, we have a very good chance of seeing common dolphins, which are the most frequently seen dolphin species. But in the last couple of days, we've seen a group of about 15 Risso's dolphins, which are a kind of bizarre, very large dolphin with a great big rounded head on them.
Why Risso's? Where does that word come from?
Named after a Mr. Risso. They're a deep, deep water species of dolphins. They'd feed on the likes of squid and cephalopods, very sort of deep living animals.
And what about the whales?
Minke whales and which would be really the most frequently seen whale species is the minke whale, and the smallest of the baleen whales, and then the biggest of the whales would be the fin whale.
A very straightforward question, but what's the difference between a whale and a dolphin?
Very good question. It is a matter of scale. You know, most dolphin species are between sort of 6 and 12 foot long, whereas the smallest of our whales, the minke whale, is 25 to 30 foot long. So it is a matter of size. Also, the dolphins are all what we call toothed whales. Obviously, they have teeth, and these are what we call odontocetes, whereas the whales, with the exception of the sperm whale, the whales are all mystacetes, which means that they have baleen plates. And these plates will actually hang from their top jaw. And they use the baleen much in the way one would use a brush. And it's used to sieve out the water from whatever small fish species they're feeding on.
In terms of going on a cliff walk, when and where is the best time in Ireland to see whales and dolphins? Is it all around the coast, or are there specific parts of Ireland that would be particularly good?
Well, what I say to people is that the best place to watch whales and dolphins is probably where you are. People are forever asking me, oh, where's the best place to go? And I'd say, well, where do you live? And they'd say, oh, I live up on, say, Hornhead and Donegal, or out on the North Antrim coast. And I'd say, well, they're wonderful places to whale watch. And people always have this sort of habit of wanting to come down to West Cork because we get to see so many amazing species of whales and dolphins. But the reality is, it's only because that's where we look. There's more watch effort invested along West Cork than there is probably in any other stretch of coastline. So obviously what we're encouraging people to do is to go out and look, not in other places, but look where you live. And now that people have started doing that, you know, we're getting inundated with sightings from people saying, gosh, now that I've started watching from my local headland or off the local point, we're seeing amazing things. And you kind of go, well, there you go, it's wonderful. You know, there is amazing wildlife out there to be seen if people will just take the time out to look.
I suppose the main reason that it's hard to know when to look and what you're looking at is because, you know, obviously they live in the sea. It's not that easy.
Yeah, I mean, you only ever really have a momentary view of these animals unless you're particularly fortunate and you've got large numbers of them and they're really, really close in. Also, on top of that, your optics are really important because realistically, if you sit out in Galley Head here without binoculars, you're only likely to see those species that are going to come in within a couple of hundred yards or maybe within a mile.
Yeah.
So you're limiting what you're going to see to maybe harbour porpoises or the occasional dolphin.
So if you have binoculars, what kind of indicators can you use? I mean, we're looking out to sea now, and I don't see anything other than a big movement of water. There's nothing really happening.
Yeah.
What kind of things happen that would bring my eye into a certain part of the sea and make me think that perhaps maybe something might be there?
You raise an interesting point, you know, that when you look at any body of water, it is largely desert. I mean, the ocean is largely a vast oceanic desert with big heaps of nothing in it. And then you get these small pockets of plenty where you get, say, upwellings, where you've got mixing of cold water and warm water. And then you get phytoplankton and that attracts small fish, which attracts big fish, which attracts large marine mammal predators. Now, how you get to see that on the surface, there are a couple of signs, and these signs are very easy to detect on a day like today. The obvious one would be seabird activity. And in particular, if you look out here, about half a mile, you can see quite a lot of gannet activity. You can see the gannets are circling, they're hovering overhead, something's of interest. If a whale or a group of dolphins are foraging, what they're doing is they're driving fish up to the surface. The fish will come in an effort to escape. It's not a very clever strategy, but they'll come within the first couple of, you know, they'll swim right up to the top of the water column. And that's not a very bright thing to do, because once they get to the surface, they can't grow wings and fly away. That's it. You know, that's their barrier. They can go no further.
Yeah.
And of course, this brings them within range of the aerial predators.
So the birds are doing what we're doing, is they're looking for them as well.
Exactly. So it's really, we're really cheating. We're allowing the birds to their thing, and the birds are highlighting the areas where we potentially might see whales and dolphins. And we reckon that in between 35 to 40% of instances where you see lots of gannets hovering and then diving, they'll start plunge diving, maybe from really impressive heights. Where you look for a couple of minutes in those areas, you have a reasonable chance of seeing dolphins, porpoises, or perhaps even a minke whale.
So you've got binoculars, you look out to the sea, you see in the distance a group of birds that seem to be diving. What else are you looking for?
Well, I mean, you're waiting for something to break the surface, and that should be very easy to see on a morning such as this. Even a small whale like a minke whale, you know, with a good pair of binoculars, you know, you can see it, you know, a mile or two away. If you've got a telescope, you could actually pick up detail in that animal up to about 5 miles away with a powerful telescope. When these animals surface, they'll usually leave a disturbance on the water, almost like the wake of a boat going down. And in a sea like this, where it's mirror calm, that could be an almost a ripple line or a disturbance along the surface. So when I'm scanning the horizon, any little surface disturbance caused on the surface like this, I will actually stop and watch that area for 2 or 3 minutes, and if nothing has come up, then I'll continue moving along. The likelihood is there's nothing there, because not every group of seabirds has a whale underneath it,
of course.
But it is a bit of a numbers game. We get lots of very, very interesting stories, but there's a rock out here called the Doolick Rock, and there was a group of whale watchers come down from the North Antrim coast, and they very excitedly reported this large whale about 300 meters just southwest of Galleyhead, and it seemed to be quite static. And I was very intrigued by this. So I rang her anyway, and I started describing what I felt was the Doolick Rock. And after a while, we got her to accept, yes, it was probably the Doolick Rock. And of course, at certain times in the tidal state, it does look like it does now, remarkably like the back of a whale.
A very catatonic whale, I'd
exactly,
say. That's another thing. I remember going out to Inishman on a boat and suddenly realising that we were being followed by 25 dolphins at the time. So presumably they will keep an eye out for boats as much as seagulls keep an eye out for them.
Dolphins are acoustic animals, and dolphins are attracted to boats. They're attracted to, first of all, to the propellers, to the engine, and they're attracted to the bow wave. And of course, we interpret often dolphins bow riding, which is what it's called, when dolphins swim in front of the pressure wave pushed forward by a boat. It's called bow riding. And we often, perhaps mistakenly, interpret that as dolphins playing in front of the boat. But if you look at it, it may well be, and it's more likely to be, a very fuel efficient or energy efficient way of the dolphins getting from A to B. So if you're a fisherman going out on your trawler, you know, the dolphins will often bow ride you sometimes for many hours. It's very efficient.
At the time, there was a group of American tourists, and I'm convinced that someone from the tourist board was remote controlling these plastic dolphins, because they were absolutely overwhelmed by them.
Yeah. Well, often when I'm whale watching and there's no dolphins around, I often look at any fast boats and speed boats in the area or yachts going by, and they will quite frequently have dolphins on the bow. So it is a behaviour that some dolphins, like common dolphins and bottlenose dolphins, exhibit.
And we've come 3 kilometres east of Galleyhead, and I'm joined now by local farmer Tim Feen. You live nearby, but I gather you spend your spare time watching whales and dolphins. Do you see a lot of them?
Yeah, from now on, yeah. I suppose the farm is fairly high It's about 300 feet over sea level, and we have a good view, and we get to see a lot of the sea from the farm.
When did you start watching for whales and dolphins?
When I was a small boy. I remember being out in the field one day with my father. It was probably the autumn time, and we're harvesting sugar beet. And he pointed out whales to me, and that's the first I knew of their existence out here. And I suppose that started me off, really.
And so how have you taught yourself to spot them and to know what kind of species are out there?
Well, I've seen them, you know, close enough when I've been out fishing. But closest I've seen is when I've been out with Colin Barnes. Fin whales at close quarters are huge animals, and they're fascinating. And, you know, just out fishing, you see minke whales come up near you and appear from nowhere, and when you see them first you might get a bit of a shock. They're just huge. One time I saw a whale thrashing the water with his tail for quite a while, and told Porrick about it, and he described it as, I think it was, the phenomenon was called tail lobbing or something like that, but I'm not exactly sure. Some people think it might be a mating thing, and more people think it might be just trying to get rid of parasites off their tail or something like that, you know.
And what kind of equipment do you use to see, or would you just spot?
I just have a pair of binoculars, a pair of 10x50 binoculars, and find them quite good, really.
What do you look for if you're looking out in the binoculars? What kind of signs would you look for to start looking in a particular patch of the sea?
Well, you'd look for activity, something like gannets diving, or maybe fish shoaling or something like that. You know, if you focus on a particular area for a while, you might see the whales if they're there. I mean, if a whale dives, it might be down for 10 or 12 minutes, but eventually they come up and you'd see them. If conditions are good, if you have a calm day, you'll see them on the surface.
And this is a particularly gorgeous part of Ireland to watch whales and dolphins.
Well, it is, yeah. I mean, people go all over the world to look at whales and dolphins, and I don't think they realise they're on their own doorstep, really. And in West Cork, we're particularly lucky in that sense, you know.
Tim, this is your lookout tower, and it's an old ruin of a house, no roof on it. Looks extremely old, and it's got steps up the side of it that you go up and perch and have a look out to the sea.
That's
what's
right,
the history
yeah.
of this place?
It's actually an old signal tower. It's built by the British after the French invasion of 1796, which was actually aborted due to bad weather. And this was part of a line of signal towers all along the south coast. And it was kind of an early warning system, really.
And what a view. That's amazing. We can now see where we were earlier. Just over to the right-hand side is Galleyhead and the lighthouse.
Yeah. You can actually see three lighthouses from this point here. You can see the flash from the Fastnet, the Galleyhead, and the Old Head of Kinsale. The Old Head of Kinsale is over there.
Just to the left of us.
Yeah.
And in between is this huge body of water, perfect for watching for whales and dolphins.
Well, it is, yeah. It's I suppose it's a place rich in marine history, like a pile of shipwrecks. The Lusitania would have sunk off of just out southeast of Donnycove, which is down here.
It's an incredible view. And the horizon is massive.
It is.
It's just enormous.
There's a kind of an uninterrupted view from Towhead to the Seven Heads and the Old Head of Kinsale.
What have you spotted this morning?
Well, while I was waiting for Porrick to come over there, we just saw a fin whale, and there's lots of minke whales out there as well. Seems to be a lot of fish there. There's a pile of gannet diving at the moment. The Irish Navy are out here on exercise, and there was one boat went over towards the galley head, and just as it passed, there was a whale started breaching. It was as if the Navy boat had passed very, very close to the whale, like, you know. And I had the binoculars. I could see it with my binoculars, but my sons could actually see the whale leaping out of the water as well at the same time.
From here?
From here, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And when you say breaching, it's that typical movement where they just go into the air and then
yeah,
dive
absolutely,
down
absolutely, like you'd see in Disneyland or Disney World or something like that, you know, where they just completely... I think Porrick identified them after as humpbacks, you know. There was humpbacks in the area at the time. And it was an amazing sight. I mean, the whale must have jumped out of the water 9 or 10 times at least anyway, you know.
Oh, it's amazing, isn't it?
Well, it's nice to see, all right, but it's not something you see very often, really.
We're just going to sit down for a bit because
you know, it does take a fair amount of concentration. What I often find is if you sit down and open the tripod and put the scope on it, and we'll give it a quick look over the next 10 or 15 minutes, and if there's any obvious whale or dolphin activity, especially this morning with the sea being so calm, it should be quite apparent. So we'll give the whole area a very quick sweep, and we'll just see what we see.
How many species of whales and dolphins are there in Irish waters at the moment?
Well, there's 24 species of whales and dolphins reported in Irish waters. And if you consider that in the world, there's only 84 species of cetaceans known to man. So our diversity of cetacean species is actually very impressive. But what we have commonly seen in Irish waters would be harbour porpoise, common dolphin, bottlenose dolphin, Risso's dolphin, striped dolphins, minke whales, killer whales, pilot whales, fin whales, humpback whales. I mean, that's a wonderful list to be able to choose from at certain times of the year.
And these cetaceans, these whales and dolphins, do they stay in Irish waters or do they travel, do they migrate?
Published work on the likes of killer whales would suggest that they can travel upwards of 100 miles a day. These are animals that potentially have a large home range, but the big whales obviously at certain phases in their life are making big migrations, especially the likes of humpback whales. Some of them are even crossing the Atlantic, going over to the Caribbean.
Baldrick, if you're going for a sea walk and you do see something and you're convinced it's not a rock, it is actually a dolphin or a whale, what species would it most likely be? What species comes closest to the shore?
The harbour porpoise is the one that springs to mind. We quite often see, and in fact hear, harbour porpoises here really, really close in. In some places they're called the puffing pig, and you'll hear this sound being air-breathing mammals. When they come up to the surface, they'll have a very quick exhalation, so they'll sound something like when they're coming up to the surface, and that's them taking a breath and going back down again. But we'll often see them within a couple of hundred yards. The most commonly seen dolphin species is the common dolphin, and they're what we call a pelagic open water species, and they would tend to stay a respectful distance away from the shore. But I've seen minke whales just off this rock down here within 45 meters. Now that's exceptional, but
right,
you can actually see them feeding on occasion. If there's a lot of sand eels around, minke whales will feed literally right under the cliffs.
Just as you're talking, there's not much happening, but I have moved it to the left a little bit because I can see the birds are dive bombing the water.
That's good. Yeah, keep following the birds. I mean, nothing is static out there. Everything is everything is in a constant state of motion out there.
There's a big group of them, big group of birds, getting quite excited over there. They're all diving now.
The best thing is, just let me give the sea one scan along the horizon, because if we find fin whales, well then, you know, they can be quite easy to stay with. Because the fin whales will spend a lot of time on the surface. Huge amount of birds feeding out here.
Isn't there?
Mm. You know, generally it takes, you know, unless lady luck is with you or beginner's luck, here's a dolphin here. We should definitely be able to show you this. This looks like a Risso's dolphin, and we have had a group of Risso's dolphins in the area, so don't preempt anything. Let me find it for you first. It's unusual to see them inshore like this because they would feed on squid species, which would live in very, very deep water. But they've got a very dramatic dorsal fin. Very blunt. Oh, here we go again. Yeah, here we go. Definitely Risso's dolphins. Characteristic, they've got... perfect. Yeah, here. Get in here. They're actually resting. It's quite unusual to actually see them resting. You can see the dorsal fins. Is the image sharp?
Yeah. Right in the centre.
Yeah. Now, they may well have gone down, but they will come
back. Oh, I see them. I see them indeed.
Risso, this is probably only my third time seeing Risso's dolphins here in 3 years. So this is not an everyday occurrence.
Oh, they're beautiful. I don't know how many of them are there.
Well, I've just seen about three or four.
I have to say, one thing is, all I can see are three fins in the water. How on earth can you say that they're Risso's?
Well, you have to keep watching them, because I've just seen one individual surface, a big cigar-shaped blunt head with no obvious beak and very, very pale in colour. Most dolphins would be quite dark in colour, whereas these guys appear, the older animals, almost pure white. They are the only dolphin species that have that, combined with that blunt head. So there's absolutely no question these are Risso's dolphins.
This is amazing. I can see about five fins. Well, yes, there's five fins there.
That's more than I saw.
They're going in a lovely languid pace and just doing that lovely curved motion up in the air and down again.
They're just travelling, as you said, in a very slow motion.
That's amazing, because in front of the dolphins that I can see is a group of birds, and they're diving, as you say, they're diving into the sea to get fish. So it's just as you said earlier, that where you see them, then you're more than likely to see these dolphins.
Well, just keep watching that area, because about a mile behind those is where I saw the minke whale about 5 minutes ago that you seemed not to believe was there in the first place. How dare you?
Maybe my eyesight is bad. You talk about resting behaviour. What exactly is that?
Well, they think that whales and dolphins have this capacity to like shut down half of their brain. So they're still, even though they are in resting mode, they're still actually very aware of their surroundings. They don't actually go into the full sort of sleep pattern that we go into.
So the idea that half of their brain shuts down and has a nap, it isn't a myth?
No, absolutely not. No. This was something that I've observed a number of times in a number of species around the world. And I guess the species I'd be most familiar with would be the killer whale. You would see resting lines of killer whales every day, and you know you could actually potentially get so close to them, say in the likes of a kayak, that you could go right up to them and almost touch the killer whale's dorsal fin with your paddle. That's you know, so they can be quite susceptible to boats when they are resting, but they're still very, you know, quite aware of what's happening in the immediate environment around them.
Oh, that is so exciting to be able to see something out there.
Well, move over and give me a look. I don't get to see too many of these guys.